On Tech News Today, Apple launched the iPhone 6 today, but limited supplies means that a lot of fanboys are going home empty-handed. Plus, the next version of Android will encrypt all data by default. Take that, Tim Cook. And Larry Ellison steps down as CEO of Oracle, or did he? All that and more coming up right now on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Friday, September 19th, 2014. This episode is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free two-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code TNT. And by Citrix ShareFile. Enhance your workflow. Send files of almost any size easily and securely with Citrix ShareFile. Try ShareFile today for a 30-day free trial. Go to ShareFile.com, click the microphone, and enter TNT. Tech News Today is the show where we talk about the tech news with the journalists who reported. Welcome to the show. I'm Mike Elgin, and Jason Hell is right over there.
Right over here.
Thank goodness he's there.
How's it going?
It's going great now. Okay, Android App Arena is at 1 p.m. Pacific. That's in about 3 hours.
Yeah.
I'm dying to know what you're going to say about the new Hangouts.
What do you think? I actually have had great experience with Hangouts, and I use that VoIP, the VoIP feature that iOS has, of course, had for a while now, and Android users have been waiting for. Hangouts Dialer is the app. I've used that, like, many times now. I love it. It's awesome. Is it working for you? Or are you liking it?
I haven't really used it much since recently. I sort of stopped using it for a while, and then I started using it again.
Yeah.
And I'm just, you know, I've been rooting for it for a long time, and it's always been a source of annoyance and,
yes,
and problems. It's always been historically a little unclear how to use it, how to set it up so that you don't get called in the middle of the night and that kind of thing. So I'm so glad you liked it. I'm hearing nothing but good things so far. So if you say it's good, I'm going to become a more devoted user.
Check it out for yourself. Your experience may vary, you know.
Well, call me.
All right.
And it's Friday, and we have Christina Warren as our guest co-anchor. Welcome to you, Christina Warren. Why so blue?
It's a good background. We have these great little pods in our new office where people can have like little mini meetings, and I've got a good background, so I'm not like blending into the wall anymore. So you guys on Twitter can stop complaining.
You have a tendency to not blend in. I saw a video online this week that was really kind of how shall I say it? You were very effervescent in the video. Can you tell us about what this is all about?
So as some people might know, Surge, the fantastic, wonderful citrus drink from the 1990s, is back. And Amazon's selling it. You can get it. It's like Surge throwback. And so we got a case of it. And people in the office decided to taste test it. And almost everybody in the office was, you know, kind of like, meh, I don't really know. I was a huge Surge fan in the 90s. Just a huge fan. And so, you know what? I decided to go for it. And I, as we'll
see. And totally so... Your Skype is kind of, I'm sorry, Christina, your Skype is kind of coming and going. Hopefully that'll correct itself. But what we're looking at here is this is the Mashable staff. There you are.
It tastes like
and you're just pounding it. I mean, you have no hesitation.
None.
It's that good?
They keep cutting back to Christina, and she's just
emptying the can. This was one take, so everybody knows. I did this in about 45 seconds, and I just pound the whole thing. I almost threw up afterwards, I'm not going to lie. That was a lot of sugar for one period of time, but it was good.
And it's like a neon green color. That can't be good for you.
You know, it's yellow 5 or something. I don't know.
And the piece de resistance, you crush the can.
Good
a
job.
Wonderful performance.
Good job.
As I was saying before the show, you should be given an immediate promotion for that spectacular performance. But as I recall from college, if you actually puncture a hole in the bottom and then open the top, it's even faster.
I recall that from last weekend.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. No.
Well, anyway, that was a hilarious video, and I'm glad I wasn't drinking Surge because I probably would have sprayed it all over my laptop. That was... very funny. Well, let's jump into the news. Why not? You may not have heard, but the iPhone 6 and iPhone 6 Plus phones shipped today. The launch was greeted by long lines and widespread shortages. Buster Hine writes for Cult of Mac and joins us now to talk about all of the various activities that went on today. Hey, Buster.
Hey.
How's it going? So I am lucky. John and a bunch of Twit staffers went down to various Apple stores to get units. And I was lucky because I use AT&T, and a lot of the other units from Verizon and T-Mobile were unavailable. And so so here it is. I'm just going to open this very quickly. I'm not going to do a real unboxing because Leo already did that, and we're going to be broadcasting that again later on today. But basically, this is the iPhone. I'm not going to do what the guy in Australia.
Yeah, careful.
Oh, poor guy.
Yeah, we're going to get to that video in just a sec. But there it is, ladies and gentlemen, the iPhone 6 Plus in all of its
large
gigantic glory.
Format glory.
Yeah. So look at that reflection. And, of course, it comes with free plastic, which is very nice. Comes off like that. And, yeah, it's very nice. I'm going to put my SIM card in it later on and fire it up. But there it is. It's a thing of beauty. Let's just go through some of these, some of the events that showed up on YouTube today. The first person to get one was David Rahimi. He is a vlogger. He does, product reviews and so on. And so, Jason, why don't you go ahead and roll that video? What he did was he ordered his in California. He lives in California. And he said, I want it for store pickup. And the store I want to pick it up at is Sydney, Australia. So then he flew to Sydney. While all these Australians were in line, this annoying American just went straight to the front of the store pickup line and walked in and walked out with the very first set of iPhones, which he immediately destroyed in this drop test that we're looking at now. He went out and immediately started dropping these things. And he smashed them both. He just completely destroyed them within a couple of minutes after getting them. So what a guy. Way to wave the flag there, David Rahimi, and make the United States look good. Buster Hine, what do you think of this type of activity of going, being the first person in the world to get an iPhone and then smashing them?
I think it's, I don't know, it kind of feels like a waste of money to make all that effort just kind to smash your iPhone that you're going to use, you know, hopefully. So, yeah. I don't know, but people have been doing it for a couple of years now, trying to get the first drop test videos and stuff like that, because the Apple fans just eat it up for some reason still.
And the Android haters too, right? I mean, because the big thing with this is hoping that everybody will watch this and be like, oh no, it's the first iPhone, you're killing it, you're murdering it. Once those YouTube views, I guess, wants to get that advertising money. Hope it covers his trip to Australia. I kind of doubt that it will, but I sure hope it does for him, because otherwise, you know.
I mean, at this point, it's 575,000 views. So how long has this been posted?
A couple hours. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay, that's not bad for a couple of hours.
Yeah, he's getting a lot of traffic, and we're sending him a lot more traffic right now.
Yep.
So,
yep.
And in another event, an Australian named Jack Cooksey was being interviewed right after getting his in Perth, Australia. And why don't we go ahead and roll that video? He, well, let's just watch what and see what happened.
It's just a normal iPhone 6. Yeah, I didn't want to
be the one. All right. We're doing the reveal.
Ooh.
His name's Jack.
Whoa. Oh, man.
So that is both, that was not the first drop test, but it was the fastest unboxing ever.
Oh, poor guy.
He says that the iPhone is fine, and he wants everybody to know that it was not the first iPhone. It was the first one in Perth, because people keep getting that wrong.
Right.
But he says it's fine, and Apple actually did volunteer to replace it for him, but it wasn't smashed or anything. So that's good.
Nice. So that one had a happy ending. So very interesting there. Now, another report by, and you guys can jump in at any time and heckle any of these stories. These are, it's just kind of been a ridiculous day. Joan Rivers, who died September 4th, I believe, recommended the iPhone 6 today on her Instagram and Facebook feeds. Apparently, she had some kind of prearranged agreement that was locked and loaded some time ago that she would be recommending it. And everybody kind of forgot about it.
Man.
And then this thing popped up for everybody who was following Joan Rivers.
Wow, that's...
I don't even know what to say about that.
Yeah. It's really uncharacteristic. She always had a great sense of timing, and this is not good timing.
Even in death, we can't escape Joan Rivers, you know, recommending stuff and telling us how to do things, even that's in death. It's perfect, Joan. I think it's pretty awesome, actually.
Yeah, it is very awesome. Now, Renee Ritchie, who's one of the hosts of MacBreak Weekly, did a pocket test. He wanted to see if the gigantic iPhone 6 Plus could fit in a pocket. Let's take a look at that Vine video.
iPhone 6 Plus pocket, no problem.
Of course.
Now, you got to love this, Jason, because it's like all these attributes of the iPhones that have been around in the Android world for ages are being discovered by iPhone users as if it never has been seen in the history of mankind.
Well, and for the last couple of years, you know, Android has been, in some circles, made fun of for its large devices for this reason, right? Criticized for, oh, well, it's not a very portable device. You can't fit it in your pocket. Turns out it actually is. You just didn't have the option. Now you do. And welcome to the world of large format phones. They're actually pretty useful. Don't feel guilty about it. It's okay.
I don't know, you guys. It can't fit in my pocket. So that's all I'm saying.
Well, yeah, they did a girls' jeans test one. It didn't work out as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I saw that one.
Yeah, that was my iPhone 5 doesn't, my 5S doesn't fit in my pocket. The 6 is barely going to get in there. The 6 Plus, there's no way it would even, like, get inside, like, the edging. It's not even going to, it's, no.
Well, just start wearing baggy pants and, you know, with gigantic pockets. There was a gag Photoshop job that somebody created a couple of years ago of an iPad pocket for the 10-inch iPad. It was just a gigantic pocket right in the middle of his butt, like right in his jeans.
That's
it was
awesome.
Very funny. Now, Tim Cook showed up at the Palo Alto store, their fancy, newish Apple store, and he sort of walked around and shook hands. And when somebody asked if he was in line for an iPhone, he said, "No, I've had one for months."
Ooh. Nice. I saw a Samsung fan asked him to take a selfie before buying their iPhone 6 too.
With the Samsung?
Yeah.
Nice.
And he said you need a new phone. We need to get you a new—
We're having Skype issues. Maybe we should call Christina back or something, or
all right.
Let's go ahead and give that a try. And in the meantime, let's look at one. Well, you're doing that, so I won't tease another video. Let's get Christina back on the line. But in a sec, you know, iFixit is doing teardowns. They've already done a teardown and shown pictures of it, and they have some videos on YouTube. But they're also doing a live one, and they may be doing that as we speak. And so when Jason, when you can get to that, if you can go ahead and launch the Google Plus page where they have the live iFixit teardown. Again, this is live on Google Plus.
And that's to isolate signal.
That's cool. They're doing this kind of thing live.
Yeah.
The cables. So I'm going to disconnect.
I don't know if there are any Apple fans on Google Plus, but
yeah,
that's one. It's a hostile environment for Apple fans. I know, as an Apple fan myself. So we can just keep that running while we talk about this. But I just wanted to ask you, Buster, how does this launch compare to various launches in terms of the line length, excitement, availability of phone units? I mean, it seems to me that there are a lot more shortages than I've seen before. And I don't know, it just seems like it's been an all-around problematic launch for Apple.
Yeah, it seems like it's been massive, the demand. I was surprised. The launch lines are huge at every store. And then 6 Plus, they're not able to manufacture as many units, I think, as people are wanting. So those are in short supply. Unless you're at the front of the line, you're not going to get one today, pretty much. So that's kind of a bummer for anybody that was wanting, you know, the iFablet on the first day.
I was surprised by the long lines because didn't Apple unveil a new reservation system that should have reduced the number of people who had to wait?
Right, you get a card as soon as, you still have to wait in for the Apple Store to open up in the morning, and then they come down the line and check you in with an iPad to give you a reservation number. So if you want to come back, you can, but nobody's, you know, going home and then going to come back today.
So, Buster, what are your plans? Have you already got one? And if you haven't, which are you going to get?
I pre-ordered, and so I'm just waiting for UPS, which is going to be, you know, a couple more hours, but as long as I don't have to wait in line, I'm pretty happy about it. I can wait however long it takes for him to come.
All right. Well, Buster Hine writes at cultofmac.com, and you can find him on Twitter at BST3R. Thank you so much for joining us today, Buster Hine.
Thank you. Have a good one.
All right. Well, in just a sec, we're going to hear about how Android is matching a very key Apple feature. But first, I want to tell you about Squarespace. Squarespace is the awesome place, the only place, as far as I'm concerned, to build and host your website, no matter what kind of website that is. Now, if you have a business and you want to sell things online, or if you want to raise money online, Squarespace is a fantastic place to do that because, first of all, the websites look beautiful. They have 25 beautiful templates. You just choose one and then modify it to your heart's content, and you can create your own logo with their logo creator tool, and you can easily switch from your old and busted blog to the new hotness, whether you're currently on WordPress, Blogger, Tumblr, or whatever it is, you need to bring that over to Squarespace so you have a higher performance blog, and you have a better looking blog and an easier to manage blog. You can manage it from a mobile device very easily. You can post via email. Again, I always talk about how much I love that feature, and I'm just shocked that more sites don't offer it. And of course, e-commerce is available for all subscription plan levels, including the ability to accept donations, which is of course great for cash wedding registries, school fund drives, nonprofits, whatever. Anytime you need to raise money from people on the internet, Squarespace is the best place to do it. And of course, they have live chat and email support 24/7, and their tech support is second to none. So start your free 2-week trial. No credit card required, and you can start building your website today. And when you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure you use the offer code TNT. That'll get you 10% off. And we thank Squarespace for their support of Tech News Today. Well, the Washington Post's Craig Timberg reports that the L version of Android will, for the first time ever, encrypt data by default. That means Android matches Apple CEO Tim Cook's promise that iPhones won't make data accessible to the police, even when they have a warrant. I talked to Craig Timberg this morning, and here's that interview.
So was this already planned, or did Google do it in response to Tim Cook's statement?
Google says they've been working on this for many months. I think there's every reason to believe them in this case, simply because you can't re-engineer the encryption on an operating system in a few days. It just isn't possible.
And is this the natural and inevitable evolution of Android, or do you think the Edward Snowden revelations prompted it to, or hurried it along?
Well, I think that a lot of companies were moving towards encryption in various paces before all this happened. But of course, the Snowden stuff absolutely lit a fire to all of these American tech companies. They were just eager to prove that they were standing up to the government, and encryption's a good way to do it.
How is this going to affect law enforcement? This can't be good for the police.
It's not good for the police. They've been complaining for several years now about what they call the going dark problem, that ways they used to be able to solve crimes, they just can't anymore because people are using encrypted services. So, I've been hearing from law enforcement folks over the past few days that this stands to be a real problem. And they worry about, a child predator maybe has, a case you could solve, a child you could protect. You won't be able to because you can't get into devices any longer.
When Apple's Tim Cook announced similar encryption as the default for the iPhone, everybody jumped on it and said, okay, this is not foolproof. It is crackable. How crackable do you think all this encryption is really going to be?
Look, I mean, good encryption is quite hard to crack, but it also depends on what sort of passcode you use or password to enable it. If you just have a 4-digit passcode, there's ways to get through it. If you have a 10-digit passcode, as someone told me yesterday, take 2.5 years of powerful computer efforts to get into it. So the more you have a role in making the encryption work effectively as well.
What if people forget their passwords? They're pretty much out of luck, aren't they?
They certainly can be. If like all of the pictures of you and your dog or your 4-year-old child are on your iPhone, you could have a problem if you forget your passcode. On the other hand, smartphones today routinely and automatically back up all sorts of important content, pictures, videos, a lot of your communications, your phone contacts, and that stuff goes to the cloud. And that creates a bit of a dilemma, right? If it's on the cloud and your phone gets dropped in the toilet or you forget your passcode, there's a place you can go to recover all that information. On the other hand, those backups also are vulnerable to police search warrants. Even if they can't get into the phone, they can still get into iCloud with a search warrant.
And when do you think users will get their hands on this feature?
I think it's rolling out now. Anyone who has iOS 8 has it, has this new form of encryption that Apple can't get into. And the first Google phones will begin shipping with this, I think, in a month or two. It'll take a while. Android's a different kind of animal, and they don't update their phones as often. So it'll take a while before the Google encryption is really in place in a widespread way.
Craig Timberg writes at thewashingtonpost.com. I'm sorry, that's washingtonpost.com. No the at the beginning of that. And you can follow him on Twitter at Craig Timberg. His last name is spelled T-I-M-B-E-R-G. Larry Ellison stepped down as CEO of Oracle, the company he founded and has led for decades. Or did he? Either we have or will soon have Eric Hesseldahl, who's a senior editor for Recode, specializing in enterprise computing. Do we have Eric? Okay. Welcome to you, Eric.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you. Now, did Ellison step down, or did he step up, or did he step sideways? What's really changed here?
What's really changed is really the reporting structure. Ellison is no longer CEO. We now have the CEO divided into kind of an office of the CEO. Heard and Mark Heard and Safra Catz. Safra Catz had been president and CFO, and Heard had just been president. You know, he was also the CEO prior of Hewlett-Packard. And before that, he was also, don't forget, CEO of NCR, the National Cash Register Company. And he earned a pretty strong reputation as a CEO in both of those cases. And so what we've got here is essentially an office of the CEO. But Larry Ellison is remaining as executive chairman and as chief technology officer.
Eric, you know, obviously his role is changing and we've got these new two co-CEOs, but do you really think that anything is actually going to change with the reporting structure? Is this still Larry's company, or do you think he's actually going to be comfortable handing over the operational aspect and the decision-making process to Mark and Safra?
They took pains yesterday on the conference call to say essentially nothing is changing. The reporting structure is essentially the only change is that Safra and Mark will report to the board of directors and not to Larry directly. So, but in day-to-day operations, nothing changes. I mean, someone actually asked, so is anything going to change in the reporting structure? Is anything going to change on the teams reporting to Heard or Safra? The answer very resoundingly was no from both of them. Now, we have a story that just moved on Recode.net just a few minutes ago, actually, that this arrangement was made, was basically proposed by Larry in order to retain Heard and Katz. They had both been approached, now very informally, for different jobs outside of Oracle, but they had both been kind of, they never really engaged in any serious talks, partially because they had these very strong retention bonuses. I mean, Heard was getting 5 million shares of Oracle stock every year for the first 5 years, but the terms of that agreement were beginning to, you know, nearing an end, and so it would have freed him up to talk outside. And so it's pretty clear that I think Heard and Katz both wanted some clarity as to the succession situation. And I think Larry, who just turned 70 years old last month, was glad to give it to him.
Now, what's the deal with the co-CEO thing? That's kind of rare and it's got to be kind of annoying. I mean, what, you know, how can you have two chief executives?
They have a very serious division of labor. Safra is a very, very powerful operator. In fact, she's one of the most highest, she is the highest compensated female executive in the world. She made about $44 million last year, and she made $52 million in 2012. So she's very, very well compensated. She's also a very tough operator, very highly respected by Larry and in fact, by Mark Heard as well for her financial acumen, for her command of the legal office. She's in charge of all of the various lawsuits and legal efforts and you know, patent and copyright enforcement that Oracle carries out. But she's also in charge. She's also gotten credit for closing as many as 100 deals worth tens of billions of dollars of revenue to Oracle. And so she's very, very highly respected in that. Now, Mark likes to run the business side of things. He's taken on a lot of the heavy lifting associated with reanimating Oracle's hardware business. Remember, they bought Sun Microsystems a few years back, and they've kind of rejiggered those hardware offerings in what they call engineered systems, basically very targeted hardware at specific industries. And Mark has done a lot of the heavy lifting there. He also likes being sort of a semi-public face, you know, after Larry, of the company. Safra doesn't like to be that public face, from what I understand. She's kind of a private person. And so I think they have a very strong division of labor.
Now, Oracle missed their first quarter earnings by about $200 million below expectations. Do you think this was, to a certain extent, a big distraction to keep investors' minds off of their relatively poor earnings?
I think Oracle has been struggling a little bit with the shift to cloud software. It's one of the fundamental problems that it has. For the longest time, it used to sell basic licenses, and it would book revenue in a certain way. And the way cloud software works is we look at companies like Salesforce.com and Workday. Subscription software just has a different accounting treatment. It becomes more of an annuity income stream, and it's very predictable. But I think Oracle is taking some lumps right now in terms of those comparisons on a quarter-to-quarter basis, and I think the street is still sort of digesting that shift. In fact, Oracle is still digesting the change itself. Its cloud software business is still relatively small as a percentage of revenue as compared to its larger legacy software business. And so I think there is an ongoing shift in Oracle's business that you know, these two executives are definitely struggling with. And also there's just economic headwinds all over the place. There's currency effects. There's difficulties in Asia. There's difficulties in Europe that are ongoing. So I think it's a combination of factors that is pushing Oracle's results to be not what we're expected. But fact of the matter is, this succession thing had to happen because it was a defined period of time when it actually had to take place.
Eric Hesseldahl is at Recode.net, and you can follow him on Twitter at AHESS247. Thank you so much for joining us, Eric.
You bet.
Facebook made another change to its newsfeed algorithm to favor newer updates over older ones and trending topics over less popular ones. The change could be a response to criticism that while a Ferguson crisis was unfolding, Facebook news feeds were overwhelmed by ice bucket challenge videos instead of the breaking news. Christina Warren, what do you think about this? I mean, this is they're constantly tweaking the newsfeed algorithm, but they never quite make it good somehow.
I know they make it good for Facebook. They don't really make it good for anybody else, right? I mean, that's kind of the joke. But I mean, I think that they had to answer the criticism of Ferguson. I mean, I know that Robert Scoble, and he was on, you know, his shows. He was on Twitter talking with Leo about how, no, really, Facebook will show you everything, but you through like a million steps to do it. I think that maybe going in this direction will make it easier for breaking so that those sorts of things will surface higher.
Well, in just a few minutes, we're going to give you an update on the Home Depot hack. It's worse than you thought. But first, I want to tell you about Citrix ShareFile, the safe way, the best way to send files over the internet. If you're just putting files as attachments to email, you're putting those files at risk. Hopefully, it's not anything personal or financial or important. And hopefully, the file isn't too big. Because if you have any sort of file that's big, that's important, that you really want to get on time or that you want to control after you've sent it, you got to use Citrix ShareFile. For example, you saw the interview that we did earlier with Craig Timberg. That interview was recorded earlier, and I had to get it to Jason so he could play it. Of course, I sent it with ShareFile. Easy to do, so pleasant to use. And when you do send a file, you can determine how many times they can download it, for how many days they can download it. You can get notified back when they download it. It's super powerful, and it's a great way for you to share every kind of file there is. I mean, some people just do it for the security. Others do it so that they can send gigantic files of multiple gigabytes. But I think you should send every single file that you send over email via ShareFile. Super easy to do. Just upload it in the cloud, and it sends a secure link for you. And then it sort of reports back to you about what's happening with your file. It's a fantastic service, easy to use, and it is just wonderful. And, you know, how many stories on security do we have on this? And so many of these are related to email and bad email practices. You want to send files securely? Use ShareFile. Sign up today for our 30-day free trial. No obligation at all. Just go to ShareFile.com, click on the microphone at the top of the page, and enter TNT. Remember, that's just visit ShareFile.com and type in TNT. A new report on the Home Depot hack we covered recently said that about 56 million payment cards were probably compromised in the attack, which means that it was a far more damaging event than last year's Target breach, which involved about 40 million cards. We also reported the recent closure of TwitPic. The company said they were shutting down after trademark conflict with Twitter, but now they announced on Twitter, of course, that a yet unidentified company will buy them and they'll continue to exist. Christina Warren, any theories about who's buying TwitPic?
No, I mean, and do we even care anymore? Like, they go through this, they make up a big deal about saying that it was the trademark policy when really Twitter was like, you can stay up, you just can't call yourself TwitPic, or you just can't trademark this name. I don't really care anymore. I don't know. But, I mean, it would be ironic if Twitter bought them, but, I mean, I don't know. Do you have any thoughts?
That would be extremely ironic. I doubt Twitter bought them. I think that they probably would have announced that. But this is a company that you would expect to go away because, of course, Twitter replaced their functionality with the similar functionality of their own. So what's the point? But, you know, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, the reason I'm kind of done with TwitPic is that they were basically going out of their way to prevent the archive team from archiving Twitter. It went away, you know, just saying, oh, trust us, but not giving any sort of details. And to me, you know, don't get in the way of people who are trying to archive content for the future and for history. Let them do that. Don't salt their game, so to speak. So yeah. I don't know.
Yep, good point. Well, and another follow-up. After the FCC closed its comment period on the topic of net neutrality in the United States this week, we've now learned that the government got more than 3.7 million comments, destroying the old record over Janet Jackson's 2004 Super Bowl wardrobe malfunction. A study by the Sunlight Foundation says about 60% of the comments were in the form of form letters where, you know, some organization or another says, here's a letter we wrote. You send our letter and say it's from you. And this is actually a lower percentage of canned letters than is normally expected in big campaigns like this. Less than 1% of the comments opposed net neutrality. About 5% were anti-regulation screeds. And the vast majority of comments strongly supported net neutrality. So that is a great that is great news. And Christina, I don't think it would be politically feasible at this point for the FCC or the government to not come out with rules that strongly support net neutrality.
No, not at all. And I honestly think that this does have a lot to do with the you know, campaign that went on to really raise awareness around this issue so that people could band together. 60% form letters is actually really low, as you were saying. Most of the time, it's much, much higher. And I think the fact that they got so many requests and that so many big companies like Netflix and Google and others are sort of just take a stand against this, that if the government doesn't come out and make it very clear that net neutrality will exist and will continue to evolve, it's going to be problematic regardless of what side of the political fence you're on. This is becoming an issue, not quite to the same degree, but very kind of similar, reminiscent of SOPA and PIPA, where it's one of the few times where, you know, money and kind of big corporations are not able to take control of the conversation because it's something so incredibly crucial. And so I think it's great, you know, for kind of everybody banding together that this sort of statement has been made. Now we just have to wait and see how bad the new rules are, you know, and what that really means down the line.
Yeah, and the biggest risk, of course, is that the unacceptable rules, in my opinion, unacceptable, that Chairman Wheeler came out with before, he claimed were in support of net neutrality when, in fact, they weren't. So, you know, the worst case scenario is for them to come out and say, okay, well, here's how we're going to support net neutrality. We're going to let people buy and sell preferred access, and that's how we're supporting net neutrality. That could happen. It's kind of happened before, so we'll keep an eye on what they do and what they propose, and it's going to be interesting. But clearly, the U.S. public wants strong net neutrality. Well, our TNT fan of the day is Alan, no last name, just Alan, who posted this picture on Twitter. He says he watches Tech News Today in an empty lecture hall on a huge projector screen. Why an empty lecture hall, man? Pack that hall. Let's get everybody, all the students of wherever this is, watching Tech News Today. Let's educate the youth of America. Assuming this is in America. I don't know where this is. How do you watch or listen to TNT? Just take a picture of your setup, post it on Google Plus, Twitter, or Facebook, and use the hashtag Tech News Today, and we will find it. And that is the Tech News Today. Christina Warren, thank you so much for joining us. You had some Skype issues, but man, your video and audio is perfect now.
Awesome.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you so much. Take it easy on that surge. It is not healthy.
It's not, but it's so good, you guys. It's so good.
I jinxed the Skype connection. I shouldn't have mentioned it. Generally speaking, Christina is recommending Surge, and I got to try it. I never tried it in the 90s, and I got to try it now. So anyway, thank you so much, Christina. I hope to have you on the show again very soon. All right. Well, you can subscribe to Tech News Today on Stitcher, iTunes, YouTube, Feely, Yahoo, RSS. So many ways to subscribe. And you can go to twit.tv/TNT and just pick one. Or you can follow us on Twitter, Tech News Today TV. Subscribe to our subreddit at technewstoday.reddit.com. And always feel free to send us your thoughts, opinions, and ideas. You can send us email to tnt@twit.tv. You can call us at 260-TNT-SHOW. Jason always just answers the phone. It goes straight to Jason's personal line. And don't miss our evening newscast, Tech News Tonight, at 4 p.m. Pacific. Tonight and every weeknight right here on the Twit Network. My name's Mike Elgin. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you Monday.